You know the vibes. Welcome back to another episode of the Hoop Genius Podcast, brought to you by NBA 2K26. It's myself, Mo Muncy, alongside me as always, the legendary coach, Brendan Sir. And joining us on today's episode, well, I would list out all of his accolades and all of his jobs. However, he does too many for me to name. But if you follow the NBA, you will have heard his voice. You will have seen him around. The legendary media member, Mr. Frank Isola. Frank, thanks for joining the show. How are you doing, sir?
Folks, what's going on? Mo, you're a big shot. Brendan, I've known you forever. Yeah. I feel like being Edward R. Murrow on the top of a building saying, "This is London." How about that? Doing a show from, you know, I was in London for the Olympics in 2012. I did the basketball when Carmelo had the crazy game against Nigeria. That was a lot of fun.
Well, you're here quite often though, because you're a big Premier League fan, right?
Yeah. In fact, I was there in August. I went to see Chelsea Fulham with my guy Harry Wilson, big NBA guy. Then my son's an Arsenal fan, so we went to Liverpool the next morning to see Liverpool Arsenal, and I'll be there in December. It's like I'm giving you my tour schedule. I'll be appearing at the Rainbow Room in London.
We're getting reorganized for you.
Yeah, we'll be there like that weekend of the, I think we're going to a Chelsea match, and then we're going to see Palace versus City on that Sunday, which should be fun.
Awesome. Well, I hear that you're not just a fan, but I hear you also play a little bit of football yourself. Coach, we're not going to call it soccer today. We're calling it football.
Yeah, as you guys know, I mean, the sport is big in this country. Everybody says, oh, soccer will never be big in the U.S. It's huge in the U.S. Everybody in the U.S. watches the Premier League. That's what, and, you know, so I've been playing for a long time. The town that I live in, we have a lot of your expats, a lot of British guys live here. We got guys from France, Germany. We play in a Saturday morning game, which is a lot of fun. We play year-round. And in fact, my radio partner, Brian Scalabrini, who you've had on, I think, as a guest once before, he does the Celtic games on TV. All 6'9" of Brian, who wasn't a player, NBA player, not a soccer player, he's played in the game with us a few times, and he's loved it.
How are we rating Scal's football skills, though? Was he like, if you had to compare him to a real life football player, who would you compare him to?
What's the guy on Newcastle? Is it Dan Byrne, the big guy in the back? That's what he kind of looks like, because when you're 6'9" on the field, now A, you got to find cleats that fit your, probably has a what? A size 16 shoe, which is not easy to do. But when you're 6'9" out on the field, he was really effective when we had corner kicks, either defending or trying to score. We just stuck him in the middle and we said, head the ball. Either head it that way or head it the other way.
That's amazing.
And if it went in the goal, he was just happy he scored. He didn't care if it was for your team or the other team.
Exactly.
Yes.
He also, you know what's funny? He didn't understand, because we do try to have a gentleman's offside. You don't want, you know, guys cherry picking.
Yeah.
But whenever he would always back off the, you know, we had him playing in the back. He would always back off because he said that I'm used to doing that in basketball. So we had to get him up to speed on that. But as you guys know, the two sports are so similar. And with the influx of international players in the NBA, and a lot of these guys grew up playing multiple sports, a lot of them grew up playing football. You know, the NBA, the American players, you know, a lot of them played NBA, you know, FIFA on video games. They also understand something else about the great players in world football. They make a lot of money. And that's attracted them to the sport as well.
Well, you know, gentlemen, I wanted to actually get your thoughts on something international related while we're here. You know, Coach, you've been around the NBA forever and you've seen over 40 All-Star games in your time. And Frank, you know, you've been behind the scenes working on a lot of them as well. This year, the NBA just announced today a new All-Star format for the All-Star game. There's going to be three teams involved, two US teams and one world team, which will feature in a round robin tournament with four 12-minute games. Each team will play each other once, and then the top two teams will play in the final. There will be 24 All-Stars, 12 from each conference, and 50% of the vote will be done by fans, 25% will be done by current players, 25% by the media, and that's to select the five starters. Then the seven reserve players will be assigned by the NBA head coaches. So I wanted to get your thoughts off the bat on the NBA's attempt to bring life back to the All-Star game.
Frank has a great take on it.
Are you all right? Want me to go first? All right, so number one, you have to remember, this has been something that a lot of fans and media people have thrown out for more than 10 years. The idea with so many great international players, why not have an All-Star game format like this? The NBA has resisted it because they like the All-Star voting. That's a sponsored thing. With the Olympics being this year and NBC televises the Olympics, NBC is going to televise the All-Star Game. They thought it'd be a perfect way. In fact, I think it's a closing ceremonies, but they'll go right from the closing ceremonies in Milan right to the All-Star Game. So it's a natural to have the inter, you know, the world team versus the U.S. And remember the success in the U.S. last year with the hockey players playing. They had like a similar kind of round-robin tournament. What I don't like about, I don't like the fact that you're going to have two U.S. teams. I would just put 15 guys on the world team. You could find 15 guys. Maybe that 13, 14, 15 guy, you don't necessarily think of them as all-stars, but that's okay. And I get it. For the 15 American players, maybe some guys won't be able to make the team. I don't like the whole round. You know, Mo, as you're explaining it, I kind of know the format. I would think for the average person, they're like, I don't even really know what you're talking about.
Especially as it's like an international audience focused game. You should it's make too it as confusing. Simple as possible.
It's too gimmicky. Just play a 40-minute game, world versus U.S. We get it. Some of the great players from the United States or guys that you could say are deserving aren't going to be on it. Maybe there's a few guys on the international team who you think, I don't know if they're all-stars. But here's what you want. You want Giannis. You want Jokic. You want Luka. You want Shai Gilgeous-Alexander on one team. On the other team, you want Steph Curry, LeBron James, Kevin Durant, and go from there.
Yeah. Well, I think here's where I really struggle with it. The all-star appearances is like a big accolade for these players. And sometimes, I don't know if they still do this, but sometimes it's tied into contract incentives as well. So now there's going to be guys that miss out on being an all-star because of their nationality. So when you just listed off some of the guys, right? So when I look at it, I've got in the Eastern Conference, I've got Giannis as really the only international all-star, unless I'm forgetting anyone obvious. And then in the West, you've got Jokic, Shai, Luka, Şengün, and Wemby. So that's six international guys.
Yep.
There's going to be two international guys on the roster now who wouldn't necessarily spring to mind from the season so far as all-star players. Because bear in mind, Joel Embiid is now apparently American as he won the gold medal with the United States.
Carl Anthony Towns, Dominican Republic.
Is he going to be international?
I think he would be. He's represented.
He's played on their national team.
Yeah. So then we'll get
Josh Giddey is a definite. You know,
yeah, Josh Giddey. All right. So we'll get Josh Giddey.
And Dyson Daniels.
Yeah.
I don't think anyone's tuning in to see Dyson Daniels in an All-Star game, no matter how talented he is on the defensive side of the ball. Because you know.
But Mo, I think here's the thing. Why not just do what they always did? Pick the All-Star team, and that year you're an All-Star. This is completely separate.
Yeah.
We're picking for this year's All-Star game. We're not going to have the All-Star game featuring the guys that were All-Stars. We're going to pick two teams.
Well, how
USA,
about this?
International.
How about this? They pick the All-Stars, and you're involved in the weekend. So if you're not picked to that USA or international team, you have to do the dunk contest, the three-point contest, or the skills challenge. Because all of a sudden, the big-name players will have to do the dunk contest. This is part of the deal. This is in your contract now. But the part I don't like about this is, why is it East and West? It should just be the 24 best players. Because now, a bunch of the guys in the West, because, you know, let's not dance around it, the Western Conference is a lot stronger than the Eastern Conference most years, especially this year. There's going to be guys in the West who miss out on being an all-star either because they're born in the wrong country or because they play in the wrong conference. And
Mo, the problem is you're not from the United States. You're making too much sense. We do everything incredibly complicated. The time has come to get rid of East versus West. You're 100% right about just pick the top 24 players. They should come up with some kind of schedule, and you pick the top 16 teams to make the playoffs. Have the best teams. If you're going to have 30 teams in the NBA, and you're essentially going to have 20 of them make it because there is a play-in, just get – who cares? Would it matter, Brendan, you would know this. If it came down to the Knicks playing the Lakers in the first round of a playoff series, would people really argue about that? Oh, look at all the travel. No one's going to care. They space it out anyway. The time is – see, Mo, you have to remove logic and reason from all your – thoughts about the NBA and sports in general in this country. You're 100% right. That's the way we should do it. We should do it that way for the All-Star game. We should do it that way for the playoffs as well.
Well, I have a take about the All-Star game that, Coach, I would love to get your opinion on.
Sure.
From just purely a fan outside looking in perspective. And I feel like that ever since Kobe Bryant retired from the NBA, no one has taken the All-Star game seriously. Because he was one of the best players to ever play in this league. He was respected as a leader and an icon for all the other players in the league. And he turned up to that game and he took it seriously. Without Kobe Bryant, the people who now lead the league, they no longer take that game as they might not be as outwardly competitive as Kobe was to the same degree that he did. Because if you go to an All-Star game and someone is taking it really seriously, that forces you to have to compete against them. As a teammate, it also forces you to step up and compete as well. Now, I thought Giannis would be the guy to do that, but I've not really seen him do that. But when it comes to this All-Star game, all it takes is one guy, preferably maybe LeBron, the leader of the league, you know, the face of the NBA, preferably him, to actually take it seriously and say, guys, we're going to go out there, we're going to compete on both ends and put on an entertaining game for the fans. Because I remember watching one of Kobe's final All-Star games. He blocked LeBron like three times. Kobe went and got his nose broken by Dwayne Wade in an All-Star game.
I was at that game.
No one's bringing that same intensity to the All-Star game. And that's why, until that changes, you could have any format you want in the world. It doesn't matter. You could do humans versus aliens. And if the humans turn up and they don't take it seriously, no one's going to care.
Well, I've coached two All-Star games. I coached the 88 All-Star game in Chicago. The most famous thing that day was, the day before, was Dominique versus Michael in the slam dunk contest. Legendary. But then on the game itself, Mike Fratello and I are coaching the East team against Kareem, Magic, and those guys, and Riley on the West. And I think, Frank, the winning team got $5,000, the losing team got $2,500, and the coaches got... And all I know is Jordan comes in with a strep throat and a 103-degree temperature. And I remember we said, it's in Chicago Stadium, and we said, can you play? He says, let me try. He gets 42 points. He won't come out of the game. All right. Mike Fratello, who's once that $5,000, is the head coach. And I'm taking care of the minutes to make sure these guys go in. Mo Cheek says, I'm not feeling great. I don't have to play. Okay, perfect. 11 guys now. And then Barkley gets 8 minutes in the game. And I said, Mike, put Barkley back in. No, I got Dominique and Larry Bird ahead of him, right? You know, no, I'm not playing. The next Tuesday, we're playing Philadelphia. Barkley goes for 50 against the Hawks, okay? You know, and then in 1990 in Miami, Frank, Chuck and I are coaching the East. The Eastern All-Stars that year are better than the Dream Team. Not even close. I'm looking at my wall right now. I got Ewing, McHale, Jordan, Pippen, Reggie Miller, Barkley, Bird, McHale, and Parrish, and then four Pistons. I got Rodman, Dumars, Isaiah. And I'm telling you, you talk about a team. I mean, that team would have beat the Dream Team by 20 points. And that's what All-Star games were about. And I just think it's, it's a damn shame. I was excited yesterday when I saw that they were going to have one international team and two NBA American quite guys, because I thought that was fair that they would let two American teams gang up to try to beat one international team, which they couldn't do.
The games are only 12 minutes long, right?
So I don't see
no one touching Shea, Luka, Giannis, Wemby, and Jokic. Come on, man.
Mo, you brought up, I do think that Giannis has tried, and I think he stands out. You know, guys like Jokic and Luka, they've kind of gone through the motions, but I've always been of the belief with the All-Star game. All right, if you look at the baseball All-Star game in the United States, it's the American League versus the National League. And the best player in baseball is Shohei Ohtani. Shohei Ohtani does not play the entire game. He usually gets about two at-bats, then he's done. I don't think there's anything wrong. First of all, I put 15 guys on each NBA All-Star team. Yeah. And the coach should just go to every player and say, how many minutes do you want to play? LeBron James is going to be 41 at the next All-Star game. It's fine if LeBron says, I could probably give you 8 to 10 minutes.
Sure.
Fine.
Yeah.
Just play those 8 to 10 minutes. The young guys, like when Halliburton and Jalen Brunson were there, they would play 25 minutes, and they would play hard for those 25 minutes. Sure. Ask Jokic. Jokic might say, honestly, I'm really not into it. I'll play 5 minutes. Great. We'll start you. Play 5 minutes. Play hard. I'll take you out. That's what they should do.
Yeah.
That's the gimmick, is getting guys to play hard. It's not it's not three-team round-robin format and all this other stuff. The gimmick is the most basic thing. Just try. We're not telling you it's game 7 of an NBA Finals. Just try a little bit. That's what we need.
And no shots from half court, no shots from the back court. I mean, it's a joke, and stuff
unless
like
you're
that.
Steph. I think I can make an exception for Steph because he can hit them, but everyone else.
Exactly.
Yeah, you know. Exactly. But that's what has happened now. It becomes a joke, you know, and I just think it's really, and they're paying him outrageous monies to appear.
Yeah, like, so I've not been to the All-Star game since Indianapolis. What year was that? 2023?
Couple of years ago.
Couple of years ago, right? Indianapolis. Man, they just didn't care. That's the sad part is like, they just didn't care. But after the game finished, my phone's blowing up because everyone's hollering at me, oh, Mo, we're going here, we're going to this club, we're going to this party. I'm like, you guys care more about this than you cared about the actual All-Star game that I flew all the way here for. I don't want to come to the club no more. This is just, like, what does it become?
So, Mo, it's funny you bring up Indianapolis because this year they had the WNBA All-Star game in Indianapolis. And
cool.
They decided to wear shirts that said, pay us what you owe us. Now, most of the women in the WNBA went to college for 4 years and they went to really good colleges. I can't believe that that was the best slogan they could come up with. Basically, pay us what you owe us. How about putting on a T-shirt that said, we're going to show you our worth or something along those lines? They then went out and replicated the NBA All-Star game. They didn't try. They made a mockery of it.
They had a four-point shot, I believe.
Yeah, they were. But they weren't trying. So on the one hand, they're telling you, you need to pay us what you owe us, but you paid to get into the building. We're not going to put on a show for you. I just don't understand that mentality. And I think it's such a bad look. And you're right. Those All-Star games in the past, like when it was Michael Jordan and Kobe Bryant at Madison Square Garden, or maybe it was in Cleveland as well. Like so here's one for you. The last All-Star game that Michael Jordan appeared in Chicago Bulls uniform was in New York at Madison Square Garden, February of 98.
Wow.
The day before the game, now Michael used to do this all the time, and for those of us covering in the media, we were fine with it. Michael was the first one never to show up Friday, which was the media availability. He would then roll in on Saturday. He would attend the practice. He would hold his media availability then playing the game. And for us, it was great because Michael Jordan, once he showed up on Saturday, whatever he said was the story.
Yeah.
Friday, he's not there. Saturday, he's not at the practice at the Jacob Javits Center on the west side of Manhattan. Now the story's out there. Here's a familiar one for you. Michael Jordan has the flu. He's not feeling well. There's a chance he might not play. Brendan knows a guy that I covered the Nets with, Mike Wise, at the time was working for the New York Times. We approached Dick Ebersole because we're laughing about it. We said, you guys and Michael Jordan know how to create a storyline because you could bet your bottom dollar that that dude with an All-Star game in New York, he was born in Brooklyn, he used to torment the Knicks, he is playing in that game. It was all a setup to make it the heroic Michael Jordan playing sick. He did the same thing in June in the NBA Finals with the flu game, and now he's going to have a flu game at the All-Star game. Guess what, Mo? He played in the game. He was great, and he was the MVP. That was Michael Jordan. Michael Jordan wasn't going. He ain't doing gimmicks. He's going to go. If you're putting him on the court with other players, he's going to prove to them, I'm still better than the rest of you. And that's what makes you all start.
This is my thing. It's like, right. I think it's a societal problem. Like, when did it become cool to not try? Like, as a competitor, as an athlete, you want to go out there in any situation, whether it's a pickup run during the summer, whether it's a regular season game, whether it's a playoff game, whether it's an all-star game, you should be wanting to compete and prove that you're the best of the best. And the all-star game used to be a chance for you to go out there and prove amongst the league's elite that you are the best player in the league. And I guess the last time I really saw that was 2020, the first year they did the Elam ending.
Kawhi
Leonard was the one who went and just said, listen, I'm not here to mess around. And he bored out. But that gimmick worked for the first couple years and then it kind of died off. And now it's just, I don't know. But I would just love to see competitive basketball. I remember growing up watching Kobe Bryant pick up guys full court in an All-Star game. I remember an All-Star game going to overtime because they both wanted to win. Whereas what we've seen in the last few years has been disheartening from a fan perspective in the NBA. But another disheartening thing from a fan's perspective for the fans in Dallas has been the past, let's say, 9 months. And Nico Harrison yesterday was relieved of his duties as general manager of the Dallas Mavericks. I wanted to get your guys' take and your reaction to that.
Brendan?
I know Frank covered it a lot on his show this morning, but, you know, it was having been both a coach and an executive in this league, I've never had a trade done in my 40 years in the league where the owner didn't have to sign off on it. You don't have that power. I don't care who you are. And so Now, if you're a really good executive, you persuade the owner that this is a good move. And obviously he did that. That's fine. But and then you stand with the consequences. My friend Chuck Daly, who Frank and I both loved, used to have a great saying, no matter how smart you are, no matter how obvious something is, every decision you make in life, but especially in basketball, it's 50-50 whether it's going to work. You know, I used to laugh about him. I'd say, hey, you got to get Isaiah back in. And meanwhile, Vinny Johnson has just made 8 straight shots. And Chuck would say, relax, okay? You know, and so you just don't know. But this was something that I don't even understand how you even get into this discussion. It's obviously a terrible decision, but you know what? You live by it. And as a leader, you know, Nico's been a leader in business and you live with it. Bad decisions don't work. Executives get punched out. You know, owners are not going to fire themselves. That's obvious. But there were other people that had to say, yep, I'm behind it. But it's a really unfortunate thing. It makes no sense. And there's no one in the world that probably in the NBA that would have done that trade, in my opinion.
Yeah. So Mo, I do the net games on Yes. I'm like pre and post game. I'm trying to be the American version of Roy Keane, who does an unbelievable. I mean, you want to talk? That's the Charles Barkley of European football.
I love that.
So in late January, they needed me to fill in on radio. They were going to Houston, so they played in Houston on the 31st. It's a Saturday night. Then I'm on the team charter plane. They fly back to New York after the game. And we're on the plane, and Chris Carino and Tim Capster are two other broadcasters. Chris Carino says to me, he shows me the tweet from Choms. He says, did you see this? And it's that the Dallas Mavericks have traded Luke and Anthony Davis. And I said, that must be a fake account or somebody hacked his account. There's no way that could happen. So we're all talking about, yeah, it can't be real. 2 seconds later, Choms comes out with a tweet where he's like, this is not fake. This is happening. The front of the plane, the players on the Nets are there, and you could hear like an eruption. No one believed it when they first heard it, which would tell you, like, if people think that your account got hacked, that tells you that it's probably not a great trade. And I'm always of the belief I'll trade anybody. I don't care who they are. But what am I getting back for? So I'm going to trade Luka Doncic, who went to the finals in June. I'm going to trade the guy in January for the second best player on the Lakers, who's always hurt. I'm not going to ask for their third best player, Austin Reeves. I'm not going to ask for more draft picks. It never made any sense for Nico. And listen, he was getting abused at the games. And let's face it, that's fair for the fans to do that as long as they don't get nasty. But in his private life, he was getting harassed by fans on the street. So it became really unpleasant. The trade never, ever made any sense. Why you would trade a guy like a 26-year-old guy for a 32-year-old guy that's always hurt. And here's the other thing that killed it too, Mo and Brendan. Anthony Davis, there's been a point up to, he played in 14 of the first 44 games. He's been injured this season. So if he was out there playing and they said, well, once we get Kyrie back, we'll be good. They're in last place or second to last place. And the guy that they traded Luka for is hurt and Luka is tearing it up.
Yep.
So it was, I never, the it's, trade, I'm
it's,
sorry.
It's ridiculous because
most people never thought the trade was going to be good. No, very few people.
I remember watching Anthony Davis' first game for the Mavs and he was bawling out that first half. Yep. He was going crazy. And, you know, I was in a bar watching it with my friends. I said, he's about to get injured. And they said, how do you know this? I said, he's just playing off adrenaline right now. His body can't do this. Like, they were running almost every play for him. I said, his body's not used to doing this. And then, lo and behold, he got injured in that game, and it's never been the same since.
Well, and, so if you go look at, like, Washington, teams that were in the lottery last year, Washington, Utah, the Nets will be back in it. Their goal, their dream is to get a high pick and draft someone that becomes as good as Luka Doncic. It's absolutely so hard to get those players. Denver got lucky. They drafted a guy in the second round who's going to go down as one of the greatest players in the history of the sport. The Golden State Warriors had Steph Curry kind of fall into their lap. Dallas did a great job getting Luka. It's so hard to find these special talents. It's not like other sports. Yep. It's not like European football. It's not like the NFL here in this country. Or, yeah, you need a good quarterback, but it's like more of a team thing. Same thing with baseball. Basketball, that one transcendent player could change everything. And when you get him, how do you just trade him away for a guy that's not a transcendent player? Especially when the guy's entering the prime of his career. I never understood it then. And obviously, all these months later, I would think 98% of us that follow the sport, fans, media, players, coaches, I think a majority of people did not like the trade. And unfortunately for Nico, we've all been proven wrong.
And yes. What's really sad about this for Nico is up until that trade, I thought he was fantastic. The moves he made to put together that team that made it to the NBA Finals, right. Going and getting Gafford, going and getting PJ Washington, going and getting all these guys and assembling, trading for Kyrie and taking a bet on him. I loved everything he had done. Yep. And then he decided to trade Luka. And I can almost kind of see the logic, right? So defense wins championships, and he was exposed in the NBA Finals because he wouldn't guard. But the trading of Luka is like the last resort option. You know, maybe bring in some guys that can teach him how to play defense, you know. I think it's mind-blowing that he actually went through it. And if you're going to do that deal, you're surely calling Milwaukee and saying, hey, I hear all the rumors that Giannis wants to leave. Right. Let's do a swap. Or you're calling, you know...
Minnesota for Anthony Edwards.
Exactly. You're getting a 1A superstar. Yep. Anthony Davis is never a 1A superstar. He's a Robin. He's not a Batman.
Nope.
And then the worst part about the whole thing is the Luka trade was so bad that people have forgotten the follow-up trade, which was terrible. Caleb Martin for Quentin Grimes. I've not seen Caleb Martin on the basketball court since then. And Quentin Grimes has been very, very good. So I don't know what happened to Nico Harrison on New Year 2025 that he went and lost his mind. But because up until then, he was excellent in everything he had done with the Mavericks. And I don't know what changed. Coach, any ideas?
I think it was Rob Pelinka's, as Frank always talks about, he had that great jacket. No, they were they were 20-year friends from Kobe Bryant, from Nike.
Yeah.
You know, so, you know... You know, I wish I had a friend that would do a deal with me like that about something. But Rob probably feels bad. He probably is going to hire him as a scout just to make him feel he's not going to need the money. But geez, I mean, I he feels badly for his friend.
He saved Rob Pelinka's job as well in L.A.
Yeah, you might
be. If the Lakers never pulled off that trade, there would be a horrible mess right now.
Well, you know the way it works. So I grew up in New York. I love Dr. J as a kid. I love Will Frazier. I rooted for the Knicks, you know.
Yep.
I really don't care who wins. I really don't. I know a lot of people around the NBA. So people that I know, I want to see them do well. I don't get wrapped up in the results anymore. It's not my thing. It's too stressful to do that. But the Lakers, with all the history that they have and all the winning they do, Will Chamberlain, Kareem, Magic Johnson, James Worthy, Kobe, Shaq, they get all these great players, and then they get Luka Doncic gifted to them. If you're an NBA fan of name the team, I don't know, you're the Washington Wizards, how are you not thinking, how do the Lakers constantly do it? Rob Pelinka is there, you know looking like Rob Lowe's, you know, younger brother with the fancy jacket on. It's like, it's amazing how it always works out for that darn organization.
You know, it reminds me of, like, a lot of people in school hated me because throughout the year, I wouldn't go to the classes. I'll just be playing basketball all day. If I went to the classes, I'd argue with the teachers. I'd get kicked out. But somehow, someway, at the end of the year, I would have the best grades on every exam. The Lakers can make bad deal after bad deal, bad decision after bad decision. And somehow, out of thin air, they will be gifted a top five player in the league. No matter
what
happens.
You're the Lakers of London.
And I hate the Lakers as a proud Celtics fan. So, you know, this is insane to me. You know, hopefully the Dallas Mavericks, you know, they've been given the lifeline of Cooper Flagg. That wasn't part of the plan. Their plan was to make the playoffs and try and still compete with Anthony Davis. They didn't plan on getting Cooper Flagg. They've been given the lifeboat of all lifeboats in Cooper Flagg. So maybe they can try and turn this around now. But Frank, while we've got you here, you've had such a storied career around the NBA and covering various teams. I know you covered the Knicks when Coach Sir was involved in the front office over there. What have been some of your highlights and most interesting experiences you've had in your career?
Well, it's definitely, you know, covering like so many of these great players and really seeing like everything that they put into it. And, you know, I loved covering Patrick Ewing. You know, the guy was an absolute warrior, got way too much of the blame when the team lost, probably didn't get enough credit when the team won. And, you know, Patrick, like Charles Barkley, like Reggie Miller, like John Stockton, like Karl Malone, all great legendary players that had the misfortune of coming along at the same time as Michael Jordan. Brendan, you know, knows what it's like to deal with Michael Jordan because the Pistons beat Michael Jordan, then Michael Jordan finally beat him. But for me, I would say the real highlight was being at those last three finals with the Chicago Bulls, because you knew as you were covering it, you knew that this was like one of the greatest athletes of all time. You know, when you're a kid and you're hearing all these stories about Babe Ruth, it's hard to, you know, put into context because you never saw Babe Ruth play. He was the famous baseball player for the Yankees. He was the home run king until Hank Aaron broke the record. You'd hear these, it was almost like these, you know, legendary tales of this player. And when you're in the middle of it with Michael Jordan, you realize, as dumb as you might be, you're smart enough to realize you're around a great player. And to be there for those last three finals, I was there when he hit the famous shot over Brian Russell. I think he probably pushed off, but it's Michael Jordan, so he gets away with it. But being there and watching him, and then even seeing like a young Kobe come along and have like a similar type of mentality. And then over the years, getting to know a lot of these guys. And the one thing you realize about a lot of NBA players, and Brendan could speak to this as well, that could be kind of nutty things that happen. But at heart, majority of the players are really good guys, professionals, you know, who care about their craft. You know, yes, they want to make money, but they're really good guys. And that's the thing. It's the relationships. It's getting to know the coaches, the assistant coaches, like Brendan. Brendan was in, you know, a front office, as smart as any guy you're going to find in the NBA. That's the things that really stick out after all these years when you run into some of these guys that you covered and you still kind of have a relationship with them. That's pretty cool.
Coach, what was it like having Frank running around the building trying to get stories about you?
No, Frank was absolutely, you know, the funny thing about working with Chuck Daly that Frank would appreciate is he loved the media so much.
Yes.
He couldn't wait to talk to him, and especially being in New York and New Jersey when we were there.
Is that you helped shape
he would, the coach. When we were over in New Jersey at the Nets, and it was just before, you know, all of a sudden he would say, finish up practice. And I'd say, what do you mean finish up practice? Yeah, I want to go talk to the media. Because we would have nine reporters cover our practices, and he couldn't wait to go out and just talk to him. He'd love that. He'd love that. And I think, yeah, I wish we had more coaches and players that would embrace the media and understand that they just have a job. Chuck used to always say that. They have a job to do. Help them do their job. Don't hurt them from doing their job.
And Mo, you know, you have a great podcast, but you know, where I grew up in the business, I worked for a newspaper for a number of years, the New York Daily News. And there's something cool about being in London and seeing, like, you know, the newspaper stand and the back pages and the front pages. I used to, you know, I'd ride the New York subway and I would count how many people were reading the Daily News and how many people were reading the New York Post. And occasionally you get a New York Times reader. New York Times readers tend to be in chauffeured cars, not exactly on the subway. And now you ride the subway and everyone is just looking at their phone. Yep. Nobody's reading the newspaper.
And then they make sure. Yeah.
And you knew this too. Guys like Chuck Daly, Pat Riley was big on this with the Knicks. Phil Jackson did it with the Bulls. Larry Brown did it with Indiana and Philadelphia. They kind of coached their team through the media. And they knew how to, not in a mean-spirited way, kind of manipulate the media to get their message out, not just to the fans, but also to the players. And it's unfortunate. I think that's kind of missing now in terms of the media, in terms of covering sport.
You know, in your time as a media member, now because of social media, as you say, everyone's on their phones, and now we have so many, like, sources say. We had Darvin Ham on the show last week, and he was talking about how he hates the sources say phrase. Do you find it harder or more difficult to gain that trust from players and people in organizations than before, because anyone can leak anything at any given time?
Yeah, but it's still relationship based. You have to go in, and you can't overwhelm people. You know, I was on the Knick beat for probably 2 years before I heard Patrick Ewing one day say my name in Dallas, and I didn't turn around. I said, he must be talking to somebody else, and he said it again. I didn't turn around. And then I said, Frank, isn't that your name? I turned around, and it was him. I couldn't believe that he knew me. So it's like it takes a while for the players, because everyone, you always have to remember, around professional athletes and famous people like you, Mo, you know this, everyone is kind of trying to get a piece of you. So they always have to be a little bit leery whom they can trust. And I always used to tell the players, remember, anything that I've written about you, all you have to do is go to the internet and check it out. So if you think I'm being a snake or I can't be trusted, tell me one thing that I've written that's inaccurate about you, or one time that you think I've burned you. Now, there might be other people in the organization that could be saying stuff about you, and you're not going to know. But with me, I always said, listen, go back and look. Anything that I've said about you is in print, and it just takes a while to build up trust. And once the players feel like they can trust you and the front office people, that's when you're better at your job, because that's when you can get information.
I remember there was a big palaver, I guess would be the word, with a report that you put out a few years ago about LeBron wanting the Cavs to trade Kevin Love for Carmelo Anthony, right? Now, I'm not going to ask you who gave you that information, right? But when you put that out and then LeBron replies back himself on social media saying...
He called me trash.
Yeah, I didn't want to say
it. The report is trash, the writer is trash.
Yeah. So when, how do you balance that? Because you obviously have got that information from somewhere if you've not made it up. So you've got it from someone in the organization. How do you balance that going back to your source? Like, you've made me look like a fool. Like, how
Well, first of all, the person I was getting that from, I wouldn't have written it if I wasn't confident. And I'm getting it from someone that's involved in that, in those talks. Once he says that, there's nothing I can do. What do you want me to say? No, I'm not. The story's true. That's being assumed. Why else would I write it? So LeBron James, listen, it's the last thing LeBron James is going to say when he's asked about it is, I got to give Frank credit. He's right. I'm trying to work behind the scenes to get Kevin Love out of here, to get Carmelo Anthony in. He got me. So yeah, I'm going to fess up. I don't expect him to do that. Did he probably take it a step further than he had to? Whatever. I'm confident in what I did. You know that you're going to kind of get beaten up by strangers on social media. There's nothing I could do there.
But if it makes you feel better.
My reputation speaks for itself. I'm fine. I would not have written it. I always used to say this to people, and Brendan knows this. Like, when you work for a newspaper, like, you print lies, you can get fired. If I'm going to come up with something, I'll come up with something a lot better than LeBron is trying to get Carmelo Anthony traded to the Cleveland Cavaliers.
I was going to say, Frank, if it makes you feel better, I can guarantee if someone had leaked a report that LeBron wants to trade Anthony Davis for Luka Doncic, he would have said the same thing back then as well.
Hey, you're right. You're right. And let me tell you something. Kevin Love for Carmelo Anthony is not that much of a stretch. Luka for Anthony Davis, that's a stretch. And only one of those trades came to fruition.
and LeBron did not say squat.
No.
Well, I saw a thing recently that, going back to the trade, was like, Bronny James was the one who put it in the Lakers group chat, and LeBron acted surprised when it came into the group chat. So,
listen, Jason Kidd is a smart guy. He's got to be protected. There's no way that Jason Kidd didn't know.
Right.
LeBron James is like the guy on the Lakers. There's no way that he didn't know. Now, to their, like, in their defense, you know, that night the Knicks were playing.
You're right.
In the Lakers in New York. Like, you're putting LeBron in a really tough spot. What's he supposed to say? I knew about it for a week, but I kept quiet and I never said anything to Anthony Davis. He's in a really difficult spot right now. He just is. It's not, in theory, his trade to make. So on that one, I'll defend him on that. Same thing with Jason Kidd. But do I think that they knew about it? Jason Kidd's the coach of Dallas and LeBron James is the biggest player in the league. I think they knew.
Frank, we really appreciate you taking the time to hang out and join us. Just for the fans out there who have enjoyed listening to you on this show, where can they catch more of your stuff? Because we don't get SiriusXM outside of the US.
Don't?
So, no, we don't.
Well, can you get the app? Can you get the US app, or that doesn't work?
I think Apple Store is like regional, so you can only download it while you're in the US. So where can people check out, do you guys put it on YouTube? Where can people check out more of your work?
All right, I'm on Twitter at TheFrankIsola. Yes. I do the Net Games on Yes, and of course SiriusXM NBA Rep. Have your people email me. I'll send them clips of the show. They can enjoy it.
There we go.
I'll see you. I want to be taken out on the town in December in London when I'm there.
Are you coming with the whole family?
No, I'm coming with a bunch of idiots who are going to go watch soccer
games. Oh, well, that's perfect then. That's perfect, because I was going to say, if you go out on the town, you might not be getting back till the next day. So that's perfect.
Yeah.
All right.
Thanks a lot, guys.
Appreciate you, Frank. Thanks for your time. We appreciate having you on, and you're welcome back anytime. That was a great conversation.
Thanks. Appreciate it.
Appreciate it, Frank.
Thanks, Frank.
Okay, and you guys listening, you guys know what it is already. Make sure you subscribe to the show on every platform, YouTube, Spotify, Apple, wherever you get your podcast from. And until next time, get buckets.